headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable tonight with analysis of the top stories of the past week. And boy, oh boy, do we have hot topics tonight. Jay-Z, the NFL, and the police protest. New York police officer Daniel Pantaleo fired 5 years after the death of Eric Garner. D.C. considering early release of some inmates. How about this? Nazi salutes and songs at a California high school. And finally, the 400-year anniversary of 1619, when the first Africans were brought to North American shores. What do you think about that? Lots to talk about. My guests are Washington Post reporter Keith Alexander, Afro-American newspaper D.C. editor Misha Green, and social and political analyst Dr. Cleo Monago. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. One more time. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you guys for coming in. I appreciate it. Let us start with this.
I think we've passed kneeling. I think it's time to go into actionable items. If protesting on the field is the most effective way, then protest on the field. But if you have a vehicle like Inspire Change where you can speak to the masses and educate at the same time as well, tell people what's going on so people are not controlling your narrative.
That is Beyonce's husband.
otherwise known as,
that's right, Jay-Z, when there was a, I don't even know if you want to call that a press conference, it was a gathering of NFL officials as they were announcing this new project called the NFL's Inspire Change Project, and also announcing that Jay-Z will be producing the Super Bowl show and all of that. But the big news was his statement about moving past kneeling, the Colin Kaepernick protest, and so on and so on. Misha, what are your thoughts, ladies first, what are your thoughts about what Jay-Z said and this whole partnership with the NFL?
Well, I definitely am concerned about what he said, because I get that that action is necessary. I know the notion that if you do not pull your seat up to the table, then you will be on the menu. And I think that's great. And I love the narrative and rhetoric that they are putting behind this Inspire Change and giving back up to $89 million to support organizations that players are supporting. However, we are going against, Jay-Z, I believe, is going against a protest that is founded and has a basis on far more than just the Colin Kaepernick kneeling. And that I think a lot of momentum was being built around the kneeling that helped to unveil other issues regarding racism and discrimination within the NFL, as well as just health concerns in the NFL that were being unveiled when Colin Kaepernick took a knee. On top of it, this man doesn't have a job. And so that is my concern when he says we are past kneeling and that we're taking action. I think it's great to see a man doing this and hoping to inspire change. But in many ways, I feel like the NFL needed Jay-Z. Jay-Z did not need the NFL.
Doc, what do you think?
Jay-Z is a rapper. He's not a political analyst. He's not an activist. He's not a social change activist. And I really am bothered by the fact that he has pretty much walked, stepped across the line past the protest that Kaepernick created based on his resistance to the murder of black people by police, which is pretty much the primary emphasis of this whole thing. What I've been hearing, which is what I expected, is a lot of talk about supposedly they're going to be doing something, but there's been no specifics about what the social justice stuff is going to look like. It's been entertainment, the Super Bowl, you know, we're going to hear about music, but that other stuff is ambiguous. And giving money to nonprofits, that's ambiguous too, because not just because you're a nonprofit does not mean you're an effective organization that's actually exacting change for our community. So that's ambiguous. And it always is ambiguous once you get out of the kind of clarity that Kaepernick had. I mean, his activity was blatantly in response to injustice. He said it. He did it. He took a knee. There was no abstractions there. This whole thing that Jay-Z is doing is full of abstraction. And he said, what did he say? We can do what? He said,
well, let's play it. Let's play it again, because and to put a fine point on it, he's more than a rapper. He is arguably one of the wealthiest black entertainers in Maryland. If you combine,
who has a lot of influence,
and he does have a lot of influence,
and
he's a businessman. So let's be clear that he is more than a rapper. But just to help you out, this is what he said. We'll play it again.
I think we've passed kneeling. Yeah, I think it's time to go into actionable items. If protesting on the field is the most effective way, then protest on the field. But if you have a vehicle like Inspire Change where you could speak to the masses and educate at the same time as well, tell people what's going on so people are not controlling your narrative.
Okay, go ahead, Doc.
Yeah, he said that we should get past kneeling, and I think he never was before kneeling. He didn't kneel. So I just have issues with it. And yes, he's a rapper. He's a very, very rich rapper. But my question, which could be answered at some point, if at all, is influence to do what? You know, what does that mean?
I wish it was a press conference, because I have a lot of questions.
Yes.
I'm curious as to where Beyonce was. because it's a legitimate question, because she introduced Kaepernick, I think it was ESPY Awards or some awards. She flew in because she has so much respect for Kaepernick that she was there and actually wanted to be the one to present an award to him. And I find it very interesting that she was not there. I'm also, you were hearing these stories about that the NFL approached Jermaine Dupri a while ago, and that Jay-Z talked Jermaine Dupri out of doing something very similar that he's now doing with the NFL. So I have a few questions that I would like to ask that just have not been addressed. And also, as was said earlier, the NFL does need Jay-Z because, no one wants to perform during halftime shows. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very smart, astute business move by the NFL to, especially during Super Bowls, right, to make sure that people are tuning in, that advertisers are happy, that people are going to stay to the halftime shows, having Jay-Z involved in these halftime shows. So it was a very astute move by the NFL.
But here's the problem that I have with this. Like you said, they reached out to Jermaine Dupri. They reached out to Jay-Z. No, they didn't reach out to, for example, perhaps NAACP. They didn't reach out to Color of Change. They did not reach. If this is truly to inspire change, as the name suggests, then instead of hiring an entertainer, then why not have substantive conversations with people such as Color of Change that are the modern foot soldiers of social justice? And even if they did continue to talk to Jay-Z, why not have a Color of Change or some other organization, Black Lives Matter, somebody who can give you the other part of this discussion.
And also, why not have a list of things that you have already planned on doing, that you're going to roll out, as opposed to just get up there and everybody just talking freely? This is a huge deal, right?
Yeah.
So why not say, we, as a result of talking with Jay-Z for the past X amount of months, we decided to do X, Y, and Z. We are working with this organization. We are doing this. Nothing of concrete.
But there's something else even more powerfully specific than everything we said so far from my perspective. Hire Kaepernick.
Yeah. That's
what I was going to say.
Give him a gig.
If you want me to do this, then give Colin Kaepernick a chance. Why? Because my wife says so.
Yeah.
And that may be the reason why his wife wasn't there.
And let's be clear. Kaepernick was fired because of white racism. He doesn't have a gig. He can't play football because he stepped up for black people against injustice. It's really that simple.
Yeah.
And now Jay-Z is you know, signed. It ain't about him meeting with these other people from our perspective compared to the fact that you need to hire a man who's competent. There have been inferior football players who've gotten hired to play football since he's lost his job. So it's clearly a statement against what he did for us as a people.
So a quick question to you all. Do you all think there's going to be some pushback from Jay-Z fans? Do you think he's at risk of losing?
No.
I have no idea.
And why not?
I don't know. But I will say this. Look, President Trump said that even Kaepernick should be given a shot, which is another about the face flip.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, last week when he was asked about whether or not, when this announcement came out, he was asked whether or not he thought Colin Kaepernick should get a chance to play. And the president said if he's good enough to play, not for any, as he called it, PR move, but he said if he's good enough to play. And that's a switch from what he has said in the past.
Well, he was a second experience.
Well, there is that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots to talk about tonight. Let's go to George. George calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, George. What's on your mind?
Okay, I'd like to talk about some positive news. The D.C. Institution Industrial Bank.
Hold on, George. We've got some other issues that we are talking about. So if we decide that we're going to talk about that issue, I welcome your phone call. Thank you. Ray, calling from D.C., what's on your mind? Ray, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Go right ahead, please.
My comment is this. I believe that he didn't actually tailor his comment properly, because if he was really trying to say that we're past kneeling, then he really should have had Kaepernick involved with whatever conversations he had with the NFL. And in doing so, I agree with one of your panelists where he said, well, bring in some people who actually deal with civil rights and things that happen to people of color that are just totally racial. And if he had done that, I think it would come over better with the people who now are saying, well, this has nothing to do with what Kaepernick was doing. He's merely there getting a business deal, and, you know, that's all well and good, but he should have brought Kaepernick in with him to talk about the problem and why he was kneeling, because it had absolutely nothing to do with the flag. It had to do with people being murdered, black men being killed.
Yeah.
So if he had done that, I believe he'd be in a better position right now, because he left out the main person who needs to be involved.
Yes.
And that's why it wasn't
Ray.
And that's why it wasn't a press conference, because the first question any journalist of any sort will say, where's Kaepernick?
Right. Yeah.
How does he fit in this at all? That's why all that was a marketing opportunity where they just talked. It was infuriating.
Yeah, it was really strange. I think one of the other disappointments also is that when he was, it seemed to me that Jay-Z was not prepared for the kneeling question.
But how could he have not been?
Exactly. He should have been.
I think it really is because they were hoping, by using the term inspire change, that we would forget that he is going against a major, major protest for not only black people, but for the world. I mean, it's absurd. The facade that's being created around all of this, I think it is just a distraction. People want to, the NFL in particular, want butts in seats. And that is the problem. They're losing viewers. They're losing black viewers in particular. People are outraged. And people love Jay-Z. And Jay-Z has notoriety for bringing money into the African American community. That's what he preaches about. But have we seen action of it ever? Have we ever seen that action? And so that is the problem, is that because he talks about it and it sounds good, that's what they thought would we would just fall for it.
And players are still planning to kneel. Yeah. And to that point, one of the other things, I wonder if he is really about it, would he be willing to pay the fines of those players who were fined because they were kneeling?
But has Jay-Z made any explicit reference in support of Cap?
I believe there was something at the very, very beginning, and but it seems to have been left behind for one reason or another. I need to go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ken, quickly, calling from D.C., what's on your mind?
Yeah, just to let you know, I'm a black man, and I'm a veteran, and I'm going to tell you, like, this dude, Colin Kaepernick, I am totally against this person, first of all. Like, the content of whatever he thought he was doing is downright wishy-washy. Anytime a backup quarterback is doing anything outside of holding a clipboard is kind of, it's borderline stupid.
Okay, now you know that Colin Kaepernick, when he left the NFL, he wasn't a backup.
Right.
He was a starter. And as a matter of
whatever you want to call him.
Well, that's a fact. But go ahead, make your point.
The thing is this. When it comes to dealing with the physical aspects of what's going on the street, him going to his knee ain't doing much or nothing to make my neighborhood safer. And then on top of that, when you look at Black Lives Matter, the content of their conversation is weak at best. They don't ever tell you how to exactly fight the police or where the police get their powers from. They don't discuss it. And I know this for a fact. Nobody talks about when the police say, I had to make a split-second decision, and I felt my life was in danger. They don't talk about where these things.
Well, Ken, I got to stop you there. We've had Black Lives Matter on this program any number of times, and so I'm not sure where you're getting your information from, whether it comes to Colin Kaepernick being a backup quarterback or being a starter, or what Black Lives Matter starts to talk about within the community. But everything that you've just shared with us is wrong. And to one other point, as it relates to Colin Kaepernick's protest, Colin Kaepernick is not the first African American athlete to protest injustice in this country. Okay, and we can go back to Tommy Smith, John Carlos, 1968 Olympics. We can talk about Muhammad Ali and on and on and on and on. But I really appreciate your phone call. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Charlene calling from Baltimore, Teresa also calling, I believe it's from Austin. We're going to talk to you as well. And we have other topics to talk about, too. Lines are still open. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in 15 seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week with Washington Post reporter Keith Alexander, Afro-American Newspapers, D.C. editor Misha Green, and social and political analyst Dr. Cleo Monago. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're going to take a few more calls before we move to the next topic. If there's something that we've discussed earlier that you want to bring up, you are certainly invited to do so. Let me talk to Charlene, calling from Baltimore. Hey, Charlene, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I wanted to comment on the Kaepernick story.
Yeah, go right ahead.
If my memory serves me correctly, the kneel was taking place during the Star Spangled Banner.
Yes, during the national anthem. Yes.
Yes. And I thought that when he said that the song was racist and tying this to police brutality, he was actually referring to the third verse of the Star Spangled Banner. It's a very racist verse. It talks about us going to our graves at the hands of other people. So I think that for my community at large to not understand why he is kneeling is absolutely absurd. I mean, I would, if I had to speak to Kaepernick today, I would tell him keep kneeling.
Yeah, there you go. Charlene, thank you so much. Let us talk to Teresa calling from Reston, not Austin, but Reston. Thanks for calling.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, go right ahead.
I'm calling with a different look at this. I just want to get the panel's aspect. Okay, what if Jay-Z is looking to buy into a team? And I'm just throwing this out here as an Angels advocate. And what if Kaepernick and other players come and sign on that team? So that is truly having a seat at the table. I'm just looking at it because he is a smart businessman, and there has to be something that we don't see behind this. So I just wanted to throw that out. You guys have a wonderful evening.
Well,
thank you
so much. You know, somebody reported that that was part of this whole deal.
The TMZ originally reported it, but now they're saying it's
absolutely not.
The NFL said there's absolutely no truth to it, and it's not even there. So for the NFL to come back so quickly and to shut that down tells you that's not even on the table.
Nope.
Yeah.
Which also makes you wonder, Jay-Z, why did you even get into this?
Yeah.
If that's not even on the table, long-term strategy, then this is all about halftime shows?
Well, in this context, he's being called a good businessman. But what he is a good word that pimps like. You know what that word is. It sounds like the rake that you rake in the garden. because they need him, like you said earlier, and he's letting himself get used.
Well,
because this whole, it's such a cliche to use the term social change activity. We're going to do stuff, and we've been hearing similar kind of comments from others in the past, and we never see nothing. And when we do see something, it's impotent. It has no transformative impact, and it's just to seduce us back into submission while they play us.
But that's the part I think that's so disturbing to me is that Jay-Z absolutely did not need this business deal. There's nothing that I think would strengthen his career and how his fan base respects him and or the people at large who never have heard of him as an entertainer. And so what concerns me is what is behind this that we don't know about. The ambiguity is terrifying. And I think that leaves a lot of room for further injustice. Yeah. And so that is my concern.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Teresa, thank you. For our other callers, hold on. I'm going to move to another subject, but we will get to you. I want to talk about the firing of NYPD officer Daniel Pantaleo, the officer who applied a banned chokehold to the neck of Eric Garner 5 years ago. My goodness, it's hard to believe. Even in the reporting of this earlier this week, I had to stop and think, has it been that long?
Yeah.
That it's just amazing to me the kind of ups and downs and how long it took them to get to this point. And Garner's family says, we're not done yet. Doc, your thoughts about the events of the past week?
Well, as we likely know, it might have taken 5 years, but most of that was resistance to justice being had. And there were several things, including the Democratic Party debate and other political issues that occurred relatively recently where it was said on a national platform that he should be fired. Pretty influential people, and it was pressure to make this happen, though it's been 5 years later, because they didn't want it to happen for the 4.5 years previously. And the chief of police even said this was a hard, hard decision for me to make, and he gave a twisted, obtuse explanation about the whole thing, praising this murderer while having to let him go and talking about Garner as if he was still a criminal. So it was very problematic how the whole thing went down, but he had to do it.
You know, a few years ago, the Washington Post, and I was fortunate to be a part of this Pulitzer Prize-winning project that we did, and one of the stories that we worked on was looking at what happens to officers who are involved in fatalities. And this officer will most likely be hired. Mm-hmm. By another department.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Probably in the state of New York.
Or Jersey or somewhere nearby. He will most likely, especially given what the chief said at the time, talking about the dismissal. So, I mean, he'll be caught up in appeals. I mean, I'm sure the union is going to try to appeal this. But he will be hired again. That's usually what happens in these situations.
Yeah. Like Tamir Rice's murderer.
Yes. Yeah. No, Pantaleo is lucky that he is not under the prison. He is a murderer, and he is a criminal. I know that in many cases like this, that the officer does not get fired. And so in that sense, I do want to acknowledge that there's something to at least do a very slight, slow clap about. However, the fact of the matter is that Pantaleo lost a job. Eric Garner Eric Garner's family lost a son, lost a father. And that's the part that I still think we're not focusing on, is that, in all the reports that I'm seeing, we're talking about the police union fighting back on this. And really, at the end of the day, is the reform is really what we need to continue to talk about. And that's not happening.
And, the thing in the explanation from the police commissioner, I think the thing that really disturbs me about it, if you listen to his explanation and then go back and watch the video, one of the things that he said was that he applied the hold and that Garner had backed him up against the window. But he said he had an opportunity to release the hold when he went down, and he did not. And that is the thing that is so disturbing to me, is if he had released the hold, it's very likely that Eric Garner would still be alive, which is what the commissioner said. And when he was down and there were at least three, maybe four other officers, Eric Garner wasn't going anywhere. And if he had, if he had applied the hold, but when he went down, and as soon as he said, "I can't breathe," if he had let him go, short of the, the asthma attack that he always had, but Eric Garner could have been alive, but he did not let him go. This was not a shooting.
Yeah.
He didn't let him go, and nor did his fellow officers say, let him go.
Yeah.
Nobody said let him go. No one did anything. And he said it
11 times.
And that's what, this was not a shooting. This was not a tasing that may have contributed to a heart attack or something like this. This was something that happened, over a period of about 15 or 20 seconds. He had time to let him go.
But the reason we're talking about this, and the guy who actually filmed it is in jail, is because of this. I used to be a police officer in East Los Angeles.
This being the cell phone. This
is a cell phone that I held up that we're using now to do video. And we didn't have this back in the day when I was a cop. We didn't, we didn't have this wonderful device. But my point is that this is why we're talking about. It's because of the phone, because they do this all the time. I hate to sound like a conspiracy therapist, whatever people sound like the people. I don't know if you listen to local news reports all across the country, but they're killing brothers left and right, and not everybody has this. And sometimes even when they do have the camera, what do you call it? The
body cams.
Body cams. Yeah. They actually don't have them on, or I forgot. And this is happening all over the country. So what happened to...
No, sometimes they even have them on.
And be found not guilty. Absolutely. So I just want to make that clear, because we get caught up in the sensationalism of the one case that made it to the surface of national news. But these kind of cases happen all the time. And I wish that, was her name Loretta Lynch, who became Eric Holder's replacement, mm-hmm. would have allowed Eric Holder's suggestion that cops always document their shooting actually occurred. She intervened on that for some strange reason and said that she didn't support Eric Holder's proposal that happens. But if that happened, people would be a little bit less likely to shoot people, but they get away with it.
And to your point, Doc, what you just said, we have to go back to Rodney King, because when that video surfaced,
that's right,
the thing that a lot of black folks, and not only in L.A., but all across this country, said, I told you so.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was the first one.
Yeah.
But like you said, these things had been happening.
Yeah.
Well, Phoenix or state of Arizona, this did not get a lot of press coverage, and it should have, that they are now requiring every time an officer pulls his weapon and points at someone, they have got to document that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's key, because what that does is you're establishing a paper trail. And theoretically, if you have one officer who's constantly doing this, pulling out that weapon, then that means that officer probably needs to be retrained or needs to be on desk duty or something like that. So that's going farther than a lot of jurisdictions.
Right.
So they are really trying to address that.
Yes.
Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jerome calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jerome. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I would like to say you all are having a very wonderful dialogue, and I'm sitting back and I'm learning and I'm listening. And I was a very big Jay-Z fan, and the only thing I can see out of this is that you all are professionals. You can't say it, but they just pimping the boy out. Go get the popular black face.
I think I said that.
let's smile. Let's shake a couple of hands. And let's just move forward, not knowing the injustice that you did to Colin Kaepernick. It's just sad. It's a shame. And I hope with his so-called business deal, I hope that he can some kind of way affect some change with his popularity and things like that. He can affect some kind of change, but I wouldn't have went in this like he went to a gunfight with a knife.
Yeah, I think you made an excellent point, Jerome. Thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to move on to this next story. This is Keith. This is your story, actually. You're DC mm-hmm. considering the early release of some inmates. Mm-hmm. Give me the short version of this, because this is a fascinating story.
Yeah, this actually started about 2 years ago with a law whereby individuals who were charged when they were 16 or 17 years old, charged as adults, and spent about 15 years in prison, murder or rape or what have you, would be eligible for early release. The findings was that young people, teenagers particularly, were not responsible. Their brains have not matured. They don't have impulse control. They don't have the wherewithal to make decisions right or wrong when they're young. And so the city council passed this law. Fast forward 2 years ahead, and here we are with Councilman Charles Allen, who is now moving beyond 16 and 17 year olds, now taking it to 18 to 24 year olds. The same parameters, 15 years in prison, but also there's a litany of criteria that a judge is going to look at, whether they have, taken classes in prison, they have showed rehabilitation, various things that judges are looking at before they determine whether or not these individuals should be released. Well, now there's a back and forth between the U.S. Attorney of the District of Columbia and the City Council. The U.S. Attorney is adamantly opposed. Prosecutors have been very much opposed to this whole law. So it's a back and forth. People are saying that people deserve a second chance, that these are young people who made mistakes, sentenced as adults, and they should not have been sentenced as adults, and they should be given a chance to prove that they are rehabilitated and that they will mentor young people to make sure that young people are not doing the same thing that they did. So it's a very heated back and forth.
But we're talking about violent crimes?
We're talking about, because remember, they had to spend at least 15 years in prison.
Right.
So you're not going to spend 15 years in prison for basically doing like drugs or something. It's mostly, according to U.S. Attorney's Office, we're talking about murderers, we're talking about people convicted of sex crimes, child sex crimes. And another concern that the U.S. Attorney's Office had, and victims who I talked to, was that victims knew nothing about these laws. Mm-hmm. And they weren't given a chance to go to the city council meetings, or they weren't given a chance to speak. usually the time they find out about these laws is when they find out that the defendant who was in their case is now applying for early release. And then they have to show up at court, write a victim impact statement, the same impact statement that they did 15 years ago or 20 years ago. So it's a very heated back and forth that we're seeing here in the District of Columbia. But what's happening in D.C. is happening across the country. I mean, it's the whole reform, the judicial reform system is going on. Looking at, you know, have people been too harshly sentenced, particularly young people?
It's interesting, even though this is happening on a much smaller scale, Aisha Braveboy, the Prince George's County State's Attorney, wants to, you know, implement her kind of second chance program for teenagers who make mistakes. We're not talking about violence, but she's been here talking about this on this program, where she says everyone makes a mistake, and she's trying to flush out that school to prison pipeline to prevent perhaps a shoplifting event for a 13, 14, 15-year-old first time from becoming part of a criminal record, juvenile or otherwise, that would send them, pave the way to prison. This, however, when you're talking about, you know, the possibility of violent crime,
yeah.
I don't know. Well, and particularly when you're talking about Charles Allen saying, well, not teenagers, but now 18, 24. 20 to yeah. 24. Well, those folks can vote. Those folks can
drink.
They can drink. They can join the armed services.
I thought about Brave Boys initiative as well as soon as I read this. But the key difference is that these are violent and offenders or true criminals. And I think it is a major difference from the shoplifter who just needs a mentor to the person who has killed someone. And a lot of things happen. And I understand that criminal justice reform and prison reform is something that needs to happen. But Keith, I loved your article. And I think that a really great point that you've brought up in the piece as well today is that we aren't talking to the victims. Kudos to Charles Allen, who wants to make a difference. That's great. But how is it affecting the people who were directly affected by the crime itself? They should have a voice in this, and that's the main problem here.
You know, I've spoken to people on both sides. Victims who have been, the article you talked about, a woman who was raped. And she's saying, you know, I am more upset by the fact that I didn't know about this law than I am about the fact that these individuals might be released. She said, I'm all for rehabilitation. And if they have shown they are rehabilitated, that's fine. But what she was most concerned about is that this law has come and surfaced and has been passed, various components of this law, variations of this law over 3 years, and many district residents knew nothing about it. And that's what I keep hearing from people who I talk to.
So is there fear that because they didn't know about it, possibly someone who's released would come back and get them? Is that kind of the theme
That's a good concern. It would be that. I mean, no, Jessie Liu, who's the U.S. attorney, she was saying what concerns her is that, you know, we're now dealing with D.C. has a high crime rate. So now you're talking about people going back into the communities, pretty much in the communities where either their victims are still living or the individuals who testified against them are still living. And so that is what really concerned her. But so far there's been at least 17, 18 individuals mm-hmm. who have been released early release since 17. None of these 17, 18 people have reoffended. No one has violated their probation. Many of them are employed, working as mentors. What Charles Allen is saying is that there are so many parameters mm-hmm. that these individuals must meet. The bar is very high.
Well, that's good. It's not everybody.
It's
a case by case.
It's a case by case. Yes.
And the other question is, let us say if you have a 17-year-old who has spent 15 years in prison, he's now 32. And my question is, even if he gets out and he says, I'm never going to offend again, and I've changed my life, what kind of support are they going to get when they get out? to make sure that they don't.
Right.
You know, 15 years is a long time to be behind
bars. So that's not part of this whole process? I mean, I haven't read the article, but I do believe that, and I support what I'm hearing, and mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear what you just said. I was going to ask what type of vetting process or evaluation process is going to occur, and it's like it's quite intensive. But is, and I think it's important to underscore what you said about the fact that these people have not become
That
needs to be considered, because I believe in evaluation. I believe in people being allowed to be free if they work, particularly children or young people. I totally support it, but I agree with what he says as well in terms of what is going to be the system that's going to be in place to help make sure there's no recidivism. Well, and is there one? Is my question.
Well, there are a lot of programs in the District of Columbia. Georgetown University has a program. There are, there's some programs in the city that hire, that particularly go after and make sure they recruit individuals who have, you know, records, prison records. Now, how well these programs do, that's a whole different story.
Right.
But there are programs in place. And people I talk to, I've heard people on both sides saying these are great programs. Then I've also heard people saying these programs aren't doing enough. Remember, these young people who are getting out of prison are coming back to an entirely different Washington, D.C.
That, yes. Right. That's what I said.
Exactly.
It's
like,
a long time. It's a different world.
Yeah. A whole different world for them. The neighborhoods. You know, I profiled some individuals who were let out in 17. And they came back to their neighborhood and like, where am I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that alone creates, you know, a whole lot of trauma and trying to, you know, become readjusted and all that. But again, none of them have reoffended. It's a lot of pressure on these individuals who are being released, because as soon as someone reoffends, you got to believe that they won't re-examine this law.
I've got to move on because I'm running out of time. We've got to talk about this story out of Southern California, Pacifica High School. Members of the water polo team caught on video at an off-campus sporting gathering. It was like an award ceremony or something like that, where they were doing Nazi salutes and Nazi marching songs played during World War II. This happened in November. It did not come to light until March. And yesterday, there was a press conference where teachers and parents were outraged because they did not know about it. Misha, where are we? This isn't, to my mind, this isn't just about Pacifica High School, because also more videos have come out as well. Yeah. Goose stepping.
Yes.
And carrying a German flag, not a Nazi flag,
right,
but a
German flag.
The current German flag, which, you know, that just goes to show ignorance on their part. Anyway, but also one of them wearing a Confederate flag as a cape. Something is happening in America.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this several times on today's show. I'm concerned. I'm worried. I would have thought, when I first heard this story and I saw the Twitter headlines, I thought these were kids that didn't know what they were talking about and were poking fun and really were just going to get in trouble for things that they didn't know. Then I read the story and I realize that they're taking songs from Nazi Germany that were particularly written and almost curated by Hitler in order to be performed for Nazis during World War II. And just the amount of research that it took for these kids
and
to get
and to be able to sing it in German.
And to be able to sing it in German. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a problem. And I am concerned that the school district didn't make parents aware of this, that there is not more security at this institution, and the fact that it's not the first time it's happened in Orange County is disconcerting. I mean, the more that we hear about this story, the more that comes out. I mean, they were talking about that this happened last year, and yet there was an incident that happened recently. On top of it, where are the school administrators? Where are the teachers? They said that this is happening when kids weren't around, and then the video where they're goose walking, they're right outside the school. Normally,
and
a teacher
should be there.
And
nobody's saying
and
anything.
No one says anything.
Listeners, I'm holding up this thing called a smartphone again.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it's relevant. They call Orange County the Iron Curtain.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard that before,
mm-hmm.
haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been called the Iron Curtain since I was a kid. And it was called the Iron Curtain because of racism and white supremacy in Orange County. So this is not not unusual at all. Speaking Germany is not unusual. And as we all probably have recognized, there was once this dude named Obama, who was a president, who for 8 years defied the myth of white supremacy and made it real clear that they were not superior and that there was such thing as black people who are profoundly intelligent, et cetera, on the national stage for 8 years, relentlessly there where you can't miss them. And that was a big insult to the delusional people who need white to be supreme. And there's been all these things that have always occurred. When I was working in law enforcement, there were white cops who essentially became cops to act out their resentment toward black jocks and black men. This is real. So this is not a new issue. This is people are getting caught, and they got caught, but it's not something new. They're replicating something that they've seen before. Yeah. And I hope more of these show up, because many of them have been doing the same thing.
Keith.
I think you're going to start seeing in a lot of places people checking their phones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Before they go in any situation, you will see a big basket.
Exactly.
If you want to come in here, you got to check your phones. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it's going to be dealt with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised that we still don't know how these kids have been disciplined.
Or if they've been.
But yeah. Who's going to discipline them?
It seems like they have not been disciplined,
right,
from what I've read. And
it's
they're
how
now
like Barr disciplined Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, come on now.
And I think it almost seems to me like, this is like an affluenza kind of situation, mm-hmm, where, mm-hmm, let's protect these little white kids, mm-hmm, from, the understanding of what they've done. And so that is why that's why we don't know if there has been discipline or what that may be, because it may have been nothing, or it may have been so minimal that they don't want any more blowback. But I think this is fascinating. I've got 2 minutes and I don't want to give it short shrift, but we got to talk about this real quick. The 400 year anniversary of 1619. Everybody is talking about this. This is a really, really big deal, not only for African Americans, but this is a big deal for America. Mm-hmm. Misha, your thoughts about this anniversary?
Well, I think it's great that we're building momentum and education surrounding 1619. People don't realize, people say, I always hear 200 years of slavery, which is just not it, because really it's been 400 years. And so I am happy of that education, because though it ended in 1865, we know that the implications of it have lasted until 2019 and beyond.
Okay. I'm glad that this is being illuminated as a fact, because we're living in the Trumpification era where there's denial about that we have a problem on our hands regarding the issue of white supremacist agendas coming from that level of government and in our institutions in this country. So I'm glad that young people in our community get to remember that this occurred, because I have found out that a lot of them were 1619. What's that, the cost of some new tennis shoes? I mean, they did not know what 1619 was. Mm-hmm. And I was being so consistently discussed. They're going, we were slaves 400 years ago. True.
How about that? Keith, your thoughts real quick.
Real quick, I'm pleased that journalism has taken this on. I'm pleased that the Washington Post, the New York Times, and so many other publications have invested time and energy and reporters and resources into telling these stories. I also think it's a great time to visit the African American Museum and, give them, I went there again, and every time you go back there, you learn new things. And this is a perfect time to be going back there and take a time and go through the slavery the demonstrations. It's incredible.
I would say I'm really glad that this has coincided with the senior year of my daughter here at Howard University, who is a U.S. history major.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so she is getting a hyper-focused look at this anniversary, and I'm looking forward to talking to her about it some more. I want to thank all of my wonderful guests, Keith Alexander, Misha Green, and Dr. Cleo Monago. Thank you all so much for being part of this conversation.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, August 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.